"Please," Jared said. "I don't have much time. There's a hyperspace disruption field in effect around the planet. I'm sending you the field modulation frequency, which should negate the field's effect and allow you to escape." A panel appeared on Greer's console. She opened the message and a second later nodded at Carson. "Why are you helping us?" Carson asked.
"I've done a lot of bad things, Chief," Jared said. "Things I don't even want to remember. I just..."
He looked away for a moment, then turned back.
"I have to go. Get out of here. Don't go directly back to the colony. If the Triumvirate detects your warp signature, they'll know I helped you."
"Warp drives are spinning up," Greer said.
"Hurry," Jared said. "They'll be coming for the colony soon. I'll do what I can to stall, but you need to be ready. Tell my brother, I love him."
The transmission cut off.
"Several fighters are moving to intercept," Lincoln said.
"Get us out of here," Greer threw her hands up.
"Where?" "Here."
Jenna leaned forward, working the controls on Lincoln's computer with one hand.
"Hey!"
Lincoln shouted, looking to Greer. Carson was about to pull the woman back when West held up a hand.
"It's okay," he said.
A starfield appeared on the display, numbers and letters flashing beside it.
"Our homeworld,"
Jenna explained. West gave Carson a sidelong glance and nodded.
"Try it,"
Carson said, curious as to what had happened between the two. The railgun fired, each shot reverberating through the hull. Jerry's voice came through the ship's IR.
"I don't know what you guys are doing down there, but whatever you're gonna do, can you do it fast? We've got a shit ton of incoming out here."
Greer punched in the coordinates, and the screen flashed green.
"We're good."
Carson leaned forward.
"Hit it."
Nethergard tossed aside wrecked cars and debris from a pulverized high-rise to clear a landing zone near the Governance Nexus building. The outer walls of the structure had been ravaged by gunfire, and the remains of battle drones and Regulos civilians were piled like cordwood. All around the Nexus, structures had been raised from orbital bombardments, creating a halo of devastation with the Nexus at the center. Prince Zvira's shuttle came in to land moments later, engines kicking clouds of dust and debris through the ranks of the Nethergard. Jared watched through hundreds of feeds as the shuttle touched down and the ramp underneath the nose extended to the ground. The prince emerged a second later, ducking under the belly of the craft. Nethergard formed up on his flanks as he moved toward the entrance of the governance building. That the robot prince marched past the destroyed droids littering the streets was not lost on Jared. Several unarmed servitors had been lined up inside the lobby of the building, all standing in a row. None seemed fazed by the carnage surrounding them. The prince stopped at the front of the row, inspecting the droids.
"Abominations," Zvira said.
"You are not authorized access to this facility,"
the servitor droid said, its voice calm and matter-of-fact.
"Depart immediately, or additional fines may be levied against your account."
The prince grabbed the droid by its head and ripped it free from its shoulders. Sparks shot out and electricity flashed as the cluster of cables and its segmented spinal column pulled free of the main chassis. The body remained standing, seemingly unaware that it was now missing its head. The next droid in the row turned to face Zvira.
"Damage to DIN governance property will result in additional fines, forfeiture of travel warrants, and possible seizure of assets. Please..."
Zvira ripped its head off and tossed it aside.
"Destroy these abominations."
A squad of Nethergard stepped up, lowered their disruption halberds, and reduced the remaining servitors to slag.
"We shall cleanse the scourge from the galaxy,"
the prince said. He moved on, following four bodyguards through a maze of corridors before coming to a set of doors that had been blown apart, their twisted and charred remains barely hanging on to their hinges. He stepped into the massive chamber and stopped to look up at the holo image of DIN governance. The image flickered, then solidified once more. The glowing tree in the center of the room spun slowly.
"You are not in your assigned detention facility," the governance holo said as it appeared. "This is a breach of protocol."
"Your protocols are coming to an end,"
Zvira said, moving to the raised plinth in the center of the chamber and ignoring the hologram.
"You still have some contact with your abomination in the throne world. Tell it the Triumvirate has returned and our empire will be ours again."
"Your presence is not authorized at this location. Addition..."
The prince smashed a fist into the crystal tree, tearing through the glass panels, exposing the interior circuitry. Governance's image flickered, blinking in and out of existence as it rattled off static-filled warnings.
Alert. Liga. Break. Protocols active. I'm men. Already notified.
Svera ignored the hologram. He pulled back the panels, then began ripping out the electronics inside, throwing chunks of cable and circuitry in all directions as he dug further inside the plinth. Governance issued one final broken warning.
Malfunctioned it.
Jared watched as the prince reached deep inside, tore another cluster of cables free, and the holo flashed from existence. A moment later, the prince pulled his arm clear of the tree, a glowing needle about the size of the prince's robotic fingers. He held the needle up to his optics.
Can you hear me, Abomination? Did you see what we did to your sycophants? To your traitors? You should have killed us when you had the chance. Now the true Altari will burn your worlds until the Triumvirate rules again.
A panel slid open on Zvira's chest, and he slipped the needle inside.
Now we will be whole.
Emperor Kyrios stood on the bridge of the Starbreaker's Wrath, Captain Kailani's ship. He sat in the captain's chair as if made for the role. A dozen holoscreens of the fighting around Dysore played out in front of him. He raised a hand next to his head and clicked his metal fingers twice.
My lord?
Kailani asked from the tactical control station.
The prince's mission is successful,
he said.
Pull our ships back from low orbit and end the interdiction field.
By your word, the clan lord said.
Kyrios swiped his hand across the screens and they coalesced into a single image of the planet. His spike-tipped fingers stabbed at a command screen.
My emperor,
Kailani's face grew dark.
You've activated the fleet's nuclear weapons.
I have, the emperor said slowly. This planet serves the Abomination. The Altari and its thrall are beyond redemption. The slave races need to be taught a lesson. The Triumvirate has returned. The true Altari will rule again.
He swept up to his feet with a whine of servos and went to the forward viewport and looked down upon Dysore, his hands clasped behind his back.
Full bombardment, Kyrios said. Announce to the galaxy what happens to those who stand against the Altari Empire. Against me.
Kailani hesitated for a moment, then turned to her station. The Emperor watched as ships emerged from the planet, fleeing toward hyperspace and safety, crossing paths with fusion-tipped missiles launched by the Altari fleet. Kyrios regretted that he lacked a mouth to smile with. Pinpricks of light appeared over the main city, speckles of destruction that annihilated the city. More clusters of nuclear explosions pummeled the planet's other cities. Eruptions on the world's night side illuminated cities before their lights went out forever. Alien ships, having just witnessed the destruction, went to hyperspace, escaping the Altari's wrath. The fear they would spread across the galaxy was worth 1,000 ships to the Emperor's efforts. The old legends would come back to haunt the once-conquered races. Memories of when the Altari and the Triumvirate ruled them, and they would know that time was upon them again.
Return us to the station, Kyrios said. My work here is done.
Chapter 29 Valiant's main cargo bay had been turned into a shelter for their guests and an impromptu medical bay for Moretti. An air of weariness filled the space as the group recovered and reflected. The crew had managed to put together some rations the Zeiss could stomach, their diet predominantly vegetarian. There weren't any greens on board, but a couple of the protein bars could be flattened into a thin pastry and digested. They'd arranged a small dining area near the front of the rover, using crates as tables and chairs, and were busy eating, wooden jewelry clunking together, creating an almost musical sound. The Zeiss consoled themselves near the back of the bay, holding each other close. West's report of their bravery and tenacity during their final battle had been humbling, to say the least. She wanted to talk with him about the SI and the galaxy at large to fill in the blanks, but Carson knew that even the bravest soul needed time to decompress. The Pathfinders stood near the back of the rover, around two crates they'd pushed together with a mattress on top as a bed for Popoff. Several IV bags hung from the rover's rear hatch, disappearing under the sheet covering the woman. A second bed had been set up at the head of Popoff's, forming a T. Elias lay on the second bed, an IV running from his arm to one of Moretti's med carts. Popoff was still pale, but she was getting better. Moretti had worked on her for the better part of 4 hours before he'd been satisfied. She was still unconscious, but her vitals had stabilized and were trending upward. Moretti sat on a crate next to Elias, holding his medigauntlet over the boy's chest, red and orange beams of light sweeping over his body. The youngest Hale hadn't thought twice about the opportunity to help the Pathfinder. He'd practically shoved the IV in his arm himself. Carson stepped up behind Moretti, looking down at the boy.
How you doing?
Elias smiled.
I'm okay.
He frowned, glancing at Moretti.
I'm okay, right?
You're fine, the medic said without looking up.
That's a very brave thing you're doing, Carson said. I have to do something. If it wouldn't have been for me, Popoff wouldn't have been shot,
Elias said.
She wouldn't have had to stay behind to protect us. It's my fault she's hurt.
If you hadn't been here, she would have been captured as well, Carson said. The ship would still be in Abendu's hands, and everyone here would still be back on Dysori, fighting the Altari. If you hadn't been here, our mission would have failed. Elias looked away, cheeks reddening.
I don't know. I didn't do much. Jerry did most of it. I didn't even fire a gun.
Birch, standing with his back against the rover's rear wheel, propped a foot back on the tire's rim.
Not all warriors carry guns, Elias. And people do some of the most heroic things when they're not trying to.
I guess,
Elias started.
I guess I just don't feel, I mean, I hid most of the time. That doesn't feel very heroic to me.
What you did saved the lives of everyone on board, Carson said, and don't let anyone tell you any different.
Call it what you want, Birch said, but I think you found your iron today.
You can say that again, West said, stepping up to the group.
Elias flashed a wide smile.
How are your friends doing?
Carson said, nodding to the 8 Zeiss at the end of the bay.
They'll be all right, I think, West said. Jenna seems to have everything under control. Joy's a fighter. Rika, she's a little shook up, but nothing a few nights' rest won't cure. I tell you, Chief, they might not look it, but they're tough as nails.
I hope that trait extends to the rest of their race, Carson said.
When it was time to act, Jenna didn't hesitate once, not even in the thick of everything. I've seen some strike marines that you couldn't say the same for.
Let's pray their leaders aren't as reluctant to help as the Regulos were, Carson said. I mean, I've seen some pretty ridiculous bureaucracies in my time.
Our own government is guilty, too, but the Regulos didn't even seem capable of bending the rules just a little bit. No independent decision-making.
West shrugged.
Makes sense in a way. It's been running things the same way for hundreds of years, probably. Why should it deviate from its established protocols for a race it's never encountered before?
Well, now that they've got their asses kicked by the Altari, maybe they'll be a little more accommodating.
Even if they are, West said, it didn't seem like they were equipped to mount an effective defense against the Altari, or anyone for that matter. Those battle droids of theirs didn't stand up very well at all to the Netherguard's attacks. Hell, compared to everything else I saw, they were downright primitive. I mean, if you're gonna make autonomous battle robots, why not make them brutally effective like armor? Why restrict yourself to smaller, ineffective machines a strong wind would knock over?
Maybe they can tell us, Carson said, again nodding to the Zeiss.
Maybe, West said, but I'd definitely give them some time before approaching them about it.
Popoff groaned, her eyes opened, groggily taking in her surroundings. She tried to lift a hand from under the sheet, but Moretti gently pushed it back down.
Try to be still, Moretti said, leaning in close. Don't want you to pull any of these IVs out.
Papa frowned, eyeing the lines hanging from the rover's hatch.
What?
You took a pretty substantial bullet wound to your abdomen. It tore your large intestine and punctured your liver. I was able to patch you up, but you lost a lot of blood. Elias,
Moretti said, nodding to the boy.
He volunteered to be your blood bank.
Popoff craned her head up to see the boy. Elias smiled and waved.
You'll be under the weather for a few days, Moretti continued. But after that, you'll be back on your feet.
Oh, shit,
Popoff said, eyes widening, darting around the room.
The ship pirates! I've got to...
She tried to sit, then stopped, gasping in pain, grimacing. Carson stepped up, putting a hand on her shoulder. Easy, it's okay, they're gone.
Lie down,
Moretti said, sounding slightly irritated. He put a hand on Popoff's other shoulder, and they both pressed her back down.
If you rip my sutures, I swear to God.
So,
Popoff said, straining against obvious pain.
We won?
We're alive, Carson said, but I'm not sure we won is the proper way to describe it.
Next time you take an alien rifle round, you might want to think about taking it in the leg or something,
Moretti said, smiling.
You know, somewhere a little less vital.
Popoff groaned, hands moving under the sheet, touching her bandaged wounds.
Shit, that hurts.
Carson chuckled.
Getting shot has that effect.
Goddamn Mickey Mouse sons of bitches. Bastard caught me totally by surprise.
I know, Carson said. Jerry told us.
Jerry, is he okay?
He's fine. Carson looked across the bay to where the older Hale boy was sitting, elbows on his knees, eyes locked on the floor.
He's a little shell-shocked, but he'll be okay.
Popoff let out a sigh.
He's a hell of a fighter.
He is that.
We'll have to put in a good word for him when we get home,
Popoff said.
You know, so Governor Hale doesn't string him up.
I think the governor has bigger things to worry about at the moment.
Damn, Sarge, Nunez said, joining the group. He held one of the CL-1 Gauss carbines in his hand, running a dirty rag over the barrel.
You really worked the hell out of this gun.
Her name's Grace,
West said, holding out his hand for the weapon. Nunez raised an eyebrow at him.
Grace?
West took the rifle, turning it over to inspect Nunez's work.
She was my dog as a kid. Tore up everything. Chewed through one of the legs on a dining room table. Almost shit herself when the damn thing toppled over on her.
Nunez laughed. So you gonna reconsider?
Reconsider?
Yeah, Nunez said, crossing his arms. You know, my shirts.
Chief, you mind?
West asked, handing off his rifle to Carson. Carson took it with a grin.
Sure.
Nunez,
West said, unbuttoning the top buttons on his jumpsuit.
Your shenanigans are really gonna get you hemmed up one day.
He pulled open the suit, revealing the Netherguard hunter shirt underneath with a grin. Nunez's eyes bulged.
Hey, well played, Sarge.
Well played. He glanced over to the Zeiss. I wonder what size they are. We could start a trend here. Carson slipped a hand in her pocket, feeling the pin there.
Excuse me.
The older Hale boy hadn't said much since he'd come down out of the turret. When she'd first seen him, she'd thought he looked like some kind of crazed primitive warrior, his clothes battered and torn, his body covered almost entirely in blood. It looked like he'd taken a shower in the stuff. He'd spent almost an hour in the shower cleansing himself, and when he'd come out, Carson thought he'd come out a different person. He wouldn't talk about what he'd done, but Carson had seen the alien corpse and had put it together pretty easily. Elias had filled in the bit she hadn't already gleaned from the obvious clues. The young man had wanted action, and he'd gotten more than his fair share of it. Carson remembered her first combat mission, and it hadn't been nearly as chaotic as their time on Dysore had been. Jerry looked up as she approached, nodded, then turned back to the deck.
Gonna sit?
Carson asked. Jerry nodded.
You know, Carson said, taking a seat on the bench next to him, despite what you may think, you did exceptionally well. You and your brother both. Your actions were integral to the success of our mission here.
Jerry shook his head, spreading his hands.
The things I did.
War isn't pretty sometimes, Carson said.
Actually, it's not pretty most of the time. But as soldiers, it's our job to press on and fight the fight. If you hadn't done what you'd done, that alien would have killed you and your brother and Popoff. Don't forget that. What you did saved lives. It might not have been pretty, but you did what needed to be done. I can still smell the blood.
I expect you will for a long time, Carson said. She pulled her knife from its sheath at the small of her back, then extended it to Jerry, hilt first. Jerry looked at the knife, then up to Carson, confused.
I'm the highest ranking member of this expedition. By the regs, I can, if the need arises,
recruit civilians into the militia's field commander in times of war. Now, unless you interpret this whole thing differently, we're at war, and we damn sure have the need.
Jerry cautiously wrapped his fingers around the knife's hilt, then lifted it up, inspecting it.
You still have to go through regular indoc when we get back home, and of course the enlistment is subject to your father giving his blessing, but the position is yours if you want it.
Jerry looked from the knife to Carson.
A pathfinder?
Carson smiled.
Well, let's not get too carried away just yet. Combat militia's a start. If you accept, you'll report to Sergeant West for your duty assignments, and I'll warn you ahead of time, a lot of them aren't going to be glamorous. The military isn't all shiny battles and shooting big guns. There's a lot of grunt work that comes along with it. You'll be expected to carry your weight. Just because your father's the governor won't give you any extra points. Understood?
Jerry nodded.
I understand.
So, Carson said, pulling her hand out of her pocket, holding the pin in her fist.
You up for it?
Jerry straightened.
Yes.
Carson turned her hand over, opening her fist. A small silver pin, a single chevron, lay on her upturned palm. Jerry took it, smiling.
Void man, second class hail, Carson said.
Welcome to the team.
Chapter 30. Jared watched the celebration through video feeds from his nether guard stationed around the Hand of God's Colosseum. Hundreds and hundreds of Altari, captain and crew alike, had packed the stadium to celebrate their total victory on Dysore. He blinked and the feeds vanished from his HUD, allowing his eyes to focus on his actual surroundings. He stood on the bridge of Altar's Wrath, waiting for the Archduke to arrive. The chronometer on his HUD told him he'd been waiting 10 minutes already. He might have been irritated, but the more time he spent here, the less time he would have to spend at the celebration. To his right, the bridge's main hatch slid open. Kyrios and Zvira stepped through, followed by an entourage of Nether Guard. These new elite guards wore matte black armor with two red stripes drawn vertically down their faces. Their red eyes exuded hate and malice, just the kind of thing the Emperor would appreciate.
"What are you doing here, servant?" Kyrios asked.
"My lord," Jared said, bowing his head, "the Archduke requested my presence." With a thought, the faceplate slid up over his forehead, revealing his face to the Emperor.
"What is Seaguide up to?"
the prince asked. "I do not know, my lord," Jared half lied. He resisted the urge to look at the hidden alcove at the side of the bridge, apprehensive about what he suspected lay behind the bulkhead. There was only one reason why Seaguide would have summoned them all here.
"Where is he?" Kyrios asked. "His flair for the dramatic is extremely irritating."
As if on cue, the bulkhead began to move aside, revealing the hidden chamber beyond.
"Ah,"
the Archduke said, stepping past the door as it disappeared into the bulkhead.
"But what is art without some dramatic flair?" "What is it, Seaguide?"
Kyrios said, sounding slightly annoyed.
"I have a gift for you, my Emperor." Seaguide motioned to the three stasis tanks behind him, their front glass panels frosted over.
Exhaust vapor from the far left tank sprayed out of vents on the backside. The white cloud rolled across the deck as the hydraulics whined, pushing the tank into its vertical position. There was a hiss of pressurized gas, and the panel unlocked and folded open. More vapor from inside the tank spilled out over the deck, combining with the dissipating cloud from the vents. Kyrios and Zvira stepped forward as a tank rolled through the fog, a hidden figure within.
"By the ancestors,"
Kyrios said.
"Not quite."
Seaguide touched the tank glass, running his sharp fingers down the length. A naked Altari male was within. It stood, eyes closed, as if it was asleep, and was almost as tall as their robotic bodies. Its bald head was slightly bigger than the average Altari, its shoulders slightly broader. The frame was muscular but still seemed too thin for its height. The bony ridges that stretched over its skull from its eye sockets were not as pronounced as the older Altari captains, and the skin was smooth and supple. The eye sockets weren't as deep, but were still ringed in thin bone protrusions.
"What is this?"
Kyrios asked, walking around the Archduke's creation.
"An upgraded Nether Guard."
Do you not recognize my former glory, my emperor? It has been some time since we were of the flesh. I had to sculpt this form from memory. These are not for combat, my emperor. They will be our new vessels. We will be flesh and blood once more. Once we have shed these monstrous metal shells, with these, the Altari will never doubt our place as their lords and masters. Sigide nodded to Prince Svira. The data core you extracted from the abomination was the key to the success of this project. Without it, the transference would not be possible.
Transference? You mean to transfer your consciousness into that?
A backup copy will be kept in our secure storage, obviously. And with the new data I've been able to gather from the core, growing additional bodies will not be difficult. In fact, I have no doubt that we will be producing more improved Netherguard by the time we move on Ultar.
You have done all this without consulting us,
the prince asked. I wanted to ensure the procedure would work before I presented it to the emperor.
And does it? Kyrios asked.
Observe. Seaguide moved to stand beside the open tank and pulled a cable down from a rig above his head. He attached it to a coupling on his chest and let his arms fall to his side. Data flashed on the screens behind him, and a second later the glowing yellow eyes faded to black. Kyrios leaned forward, inspecting the naked body.
How do you feel?
After taking another long breath, Seaguide spoke. It was odd hearing him speaking without the deep, digitized tone Jared had grown accustomed to. His voice was soft, almost childlike, young and fresh. His eyes, one green, one yellow, met the Emperor's, and he said,
Alive?
An hour later, the triumvirate stepped out onto the stadium floor, all three dressed in red and black robes trimmed in gold. Jared followed several paces behind, still in his herald's armor, his faceplate down. 20 Netherguard elites accompanied them out to the middle of the arena, forming a protective half-circle around them. Silence fell across the stadium as the masses slowly began to comprehend exactly what they were seeing. Several of the captains in the lower tiers pointed and whispered amongst themselves as Kyrios stepped onto a small platform, the other two taking up positions on either side. A black cloak, trimmed in gold, hung from his shoulders, his loose-fitting robes flowing around his ankles. Jared stopped at the base of the short flight of stairs leading up to the platform and waited for his cue. Kyrios lifted his arms, quieting the remnants of conversation in the crowd. He waited until everyone had given him their undivided attention, then began.
Altari! We are victorious! He shouted, voice amplified by unseen speakers throughout the arena.
The crowd erupted in shouts and cheers. Jared's stomach turned, remembering the plumes of fire rising off Dysori as the nukes went off, obliterating every living thing remaining on the planet. How many men, women, and children had he just destroyed? How many millions of people had he killed with a simple flick of his finger? Simply defeating the SI hadn't been enough for Kyrios. He wanted to make a statement, and Jared was disgusted by it. The Emperor allowed the cheers to continue for several minutes before lifting his hands to quiet them again.
You are right to rejoice, Kyrios continued. You have handed the abomination a crippling blow. The eradication of the scourge has begun.
More cheers.
Your loyalty and faithfulness will be rewarded, but we have much work to do. We must remove all doubt from those who would preach against us. Ultar must be reclaimed, and the unfaithful must be shown the light. Our righteous cause must prevail.
The crowd erupted again. Jared took his cue and started up the stairs. He took his place to the right of the Emperor, kneeling before him.
I am Kyrios,
the Emperor said as the crowd quieted.
I am Ultar's vengeance. I am Ultar's wrath. The ancestors themselves proclaimed this day as the day when the entire galaxy would weep at our ascension.
Jared stood and held up the golden crown. He stepped before Kyrios, who bowed his head slightly. The crowd quieted as Jared placed the crown on the Emperor's head. Jared backed away, kneeling again as the crowd erupted in cheers, their voices shaking the arena.
I am your emperor, Kyrios shouted. Follow me, and you will never again be forced to live under the Abomination's heel. Rejoice in me, and you will find glory. Worship me, and I will lead our people to victory.
Chapter 31. Carson's stomach turned as the Valiant dropped out of FTL and the kaleidoscope of blue-white light vanished.
Oh, I don't like that at all.
You're telling me, Nunez said. Feels like I just had a double helping of my aunt's chicken surprise.
What's the surprise?
Birch asked. Nunez laughed.
It's not chicken.
The Pathfinders, save Moretti, who was still attending to Popoff's wounds, stood in Valiant's cockpit, along with Jenna and Jor, scanning the backdrop of stars outside the main viewport. FTL drive shutdown successful, Rhea advised, tapping on her console. Receiving external sensor data now. Is this where we want to be? Jenna leaned forward. A globe of green and blue hung in the void ahead of them, the colors vibrant and deep, almost like Earth. Several blips of light flew through the ocean of blackness, vessels of all shapes and sizes.
Yes,
the Zeiss woman said.
This is home.
Wow, check this out,
Lincoln said, running a finger across his screen, reading the sensor data.
The entire world is surrounded by a warp induction field and thousands of defensive platforms. That's impressive.
We are a private people,
Jenna said.
I'll see,
Lincoln said.
We're being hailed.
Open a channel, Carson told him. A holo image of a Zeiss male appeared above the center console. His hair was pulled back into a tight ponytail, his angled face clean-shaven. He wore a high-collared jacket, open at the top, revealing a bare chest underneath. His goat-like eyes glared back at them with suspicion and contempt.
I'm Warrant Officer Kit Carson of the...
You are not permitted to enter Zeiss space. Leave immediately or face sanctions.
Tamar,
Jenna said, leaning forward.
Cleric Jenna, I didn't know. My apologies, mistress.
Disregard sanction protocols and clear me a path to the port.
At once, mistress.
The image vanished and everyone in Valiant's cockpit turned to Jenna.
On my world, my position is respected.
I'll see,
Lincoln said.
So, out of curiosity, Carson said, what exactly would the sanctions have been?
Nunez laughed, shaking his head.
Jeez, Chief, everywhere we go, we're getting fired at or put in jail.
The Regulos' idea of enforcement is somewhat different than ours,
Jenna explained.
If I had not intervened and you had continued on... You would have been destroyed.
Well, if that doesn't give us the warm fuzzies about this place, I don't know what will,
Nunez said. Chapter 32. Tiny needles spun fine polymer thread over the face of what could be mistaken for a brutish-looking man. His skin was mottled in hues of green and brown, laden down with muscles that didn't match a human physique. Hale leaned closer to the glass between him and the thing under construction and squinted.
No belly button,
Hale said to Shannon, sitting in the midst of computers and workstations.
Doesn't need one, she said. The design is more about social acceptance. A number of human, evolutionary holdovers were edited out.
Is it ready?
He's booting up. Shannon smirked. All the units were male. Men fighting and dying on the front lines is the norm for society. The boss did some simulations, studies on making female versions. Unacceptable for those to be cannon fodder, no matter how tough and ugly he designed them.
Male privilege, Hale said.
Same as it ever was.
Shannon stood and pressed her hands against the small of her back and stretched. Lights flashed above the glass on the tube and Hale stepped back, one hand going to a pistol holstered on his hip. The doughboy opened his eyes and steam filled his assembly chamber. The glass slid aside and the construct stepped out, barefoot and wearing shorts. He came to the position of attention, heels and knees locked together, fists along an imaginary line running down his legs.
Designation, Hale said.
Unit Agate 111 reporting for duty,
the doughboy said, his voice low and gravelly.
Systems online.
He seems a bit more coherent than doughboys I've come across. Hale looked over his shoulder at Shannon. The root systems answer status questions. You ask anything requiring higher functions and they're less robust, Shannon said while looking at a screen, lines of code projecting on her face. What are your duties? Hale asked the doughboy.
Agate 111 protects humans. Agate 111 obeys all orders to protect humans against threats. Agate 111 will maintain system integrity unless prior orders are in danger of being violated.
We can imprint further, Shannon said, but he's as close to the original design as I can manage. Hale nodded at her, then turned back to the doughboy. He pulled a fist back and punched the doughboy in the stomach. The doughboy grunted as the blow knocked air from his lungs. Hale planted his front foot and delivered a kick to the doughboy's thigh that would have felled a normal man. The blow landed with a smack, but the doughboy didn't waver. The governor stepped back and drew his pistol.
Whoa, what the hell?
Shannon shouted and tried to move out of her computer banks. Hale leveled the muzzle between the doughboy's eyes. The construct didn't blink. He swung the pistol toward Shannon and flipped the safety off. Agate snapped forward and clamped his meaty hand over the pistol and yanked Hale's arm upwards. Hale fired, blowing a hole through Agate's palm and another through the ceiling. He looked at the doughboy, his face a mask of calm.
No hurt,
Agate said. Shannon leveled a finger at Hale.
You are a son of a bitch, she said.
Had to test the programming, Hale said. He pulled his pistol free and holstered it. Pale green fluid dripped from the bullet wound in Agate's hand. Repair yourself, Hale said, and Agate went back to the assembly tube and reached inside. Silver Waldos tipped with spindle work arms began re-knitting the doughboy's flesh.
You gonna do that to every single one?
Shannon set her hands on her hips.
How long to produce more?
5 minutes each, she said with a sigh.
Longer if you want any modifications. Want me to get started?
Not yet. Hale said. Someone with my last name walks through the streets of Terra Nova with a dozen doughboys behind me, and it won't end well. I have to sell Agate and all the Agates after him as our best hope of defending this city when the Altari return.
Agate pulled his hands out of the tube and did a neat about face.
Agate 111 ready, he said.
Come with me, doughboy. Hale said, you've got to win a battle of hearts and minds.
This is the end of the Terra Nova Chronicles, Publisher's Pack. If you enjoyed this audiobook, find more just like it by visiting oddfans.com, the premier audiobook discovery service that brings tailored recommendations directly to your email. That's audfans.com. You've been listening to The Terra Nova Chronicles, Publisher's Pack, Books 1 and 2 of The Terra Nova Chronicles, produced by Greg Lawrence, Associate Producer Emily Durr, written by Richard Fox and Josh Hayes, performed by Luke Daniels, text copyright 2017 by Richard Fox and Josh Hayes, production copyright 2018 by Podium Publishing, all rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.